The Nourish and Shine podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only, and it is not medical, mental health, or healthcare advice. The information presented here is not intended to diagnose, treat, heal, cure, or prevent any illness, medical condition, or mental or emotional condition. Please make sure you consult with a trusted healthcare professional before you make any changes. Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole, vibrant life starting now. I absolutely love today's episode. I had such an amazing guest on. Her name is Radhani Banik. She is a board-certified ophthalmologist and fellowship-trained neuro-ophthalmologist who really specializes in a functional medicine approach to eye health and visual health. So we talk about nutrition, supplements, lifestyle. Even at the end, we touch on essential oils, which is so super interesting. She put tons of resources in the show notes, so please make sure to check those out. And I hope you love this interview as much as I do. Please, if you do, leave me a rating or review on iTunes. I would really appreciate it. Welcome to Nourish and Shine. Today I'm talking with Dr. Rani Banik. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I really am excited to be here.
Wonderful. And I'm so excited to have you here. And today we're talking really about nutrition and eye health. But first, before we get into that, I'd love to hear more about you and how you got into this.
Mm-hmm, sure. So this is a question I get often. And so I actually, I initially did the traditional route in terms of my medical training. So I went to medical school, I did an internship, I did a residency in ophthalmology, and then I did a fellowship in neuro-ophthalmology, which is the connection between the brain and the eyes, how our visual system works and how we see and how we move our eyes. And I was practicing for I would say well over 15 years in academic medicine. So I was employed by a large institution. I was seeing patients. I was teaching, doing some research. But I felt like, you know, something was kind of missing in my practice. And around the same time as this was going on, I started to feel this way. I also had some health problems of my own. I actually had migraine for many years, but my migraines were getting to the point where they were really uncontrollable and very severe. And I basically woke up with a migraine every single day for about 2 years. And it was very, very debilitating. And, you know, meanwhile, I was trying to work, trying to take care of my family and just suffering and in pain all the time. And I went to, I live in New York City. I went to all the top migraine specialists I could find in New York, and they prescribed me medication after medication after medication, and nothing was working. You know, I had all these horrible side effects from these drugs. And finally, at some point, I said, you know what, this is not working. I have to find a better way. And I started to research other ways to treat migraine that didn't rely on pharmaceuticals. And what I found was that there's actually quite a bit out there on natural ways to improve migraines, including nutritional interventions, including some supplements, botanicals. And it just opened up my world to, you know, something I'd never been trained in, which is really the power of food and nutrition as medicine. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate, having gone through medical school, you know, we really, again, are not trained in nutrition. And, you know, perhaps we get maybe a day or two of nutrition in our entire medical training, but our health relies so much on what we eat, what we're putting into our bodies. And so what happened was, as I was doing my research, I was kind of experimenting on myself with some of these nutritional and supplements in my own life. And what I found was it made a tremendous difference, and I finally started to get better. And then I realized, hey, maybe there's something to this. So I started to use some of these strategies for my patients. It helped them tremendously. Many people got better. They were able to get off of their prescription migraine medications. And then I discovered functional medicine through Institute for Functional Medicine. And this, it truly turned my life around. It turned my career around. I decided to quit my job and pursue functional medicine 100%. And so I started my own practice. I began training, getting the certification. So it's really had a major impact in not only my own health, but the health of my patients and my career as well. So that's my story in a nutshell.
You said you're now certified in functional medicine. Is that right?
I am taking my exam this year, actually. So I finished all the certification, the courses, the modules, and now it's a matter of the exam.
I just got certified. Definitely
quite a bit of information, but I'm preparing. I'm, slowly studying, and I'll get there, hopefully.
As far as eyes and our health go, I know you talked about the power of food and nutrition. Can you speak more into that and why food and nutrition is really important when it comes to our eye health?
Yes, sure. Great question. So our eyes have so many delicate tissues within them. We have the cornea, the lens, the retina, and many other structures. And, most people, when we're young, we have pretty healthy eyes. But as time goes on, they get exposed to various different factors that can cause oxidative damage. So for example, various light rays can cause oxidative damage in the eyes. We may think light is great for our eyes. That's what our eyes were intended to, is to process light. But, certain wavelengths can be deleterious to our eye health. And so, and then there are toxins in the environment, or there are nutritional deficiencies that can cause oxidative damage as well. It can cause to our cells within our eyes not functioning properly. It can cause damage to the structures of those cells, or perhaps even mitochondrial dysfunction. So, through my training in functional medicine, I really realized the importance of, supporting our eyes with proper nutrition. And what that, really comes down to is making sure that you have a diverse diet, really rich in plant-based foods. So lots of antioxidants, lots of healthy fats, lots of other nutrients that really get from fruits and vegetables that can protect our eyes against this oxidative damage. So that's really kind of been my the cornerstone of my practice right now, is teaching people based on their, their eye health and, where they are, is how to preserve and protect their vision through eating properly. And then lifestyle factors come into play as well, which are important. But nutrition, I would say, is number one, two, and three when it comes to protecting your vision.
That makes me think of the work of Dr. Deanna Minnick, and she teaches in IFM, but, really eating the rainbow and the importance of all those different foods.
I love Deanna's work. I mean, she's an amazing person, and she's put so much great information out there. And absolutely, she talks about the rainbow of colors, and that couldn't be more true for eye health, is having that diversity. And one thing she says, which I absolutely love, and I tell my patients, is she likes to say, we eat, I guess most of us eat three meals a day, so it's about 21 meals in a week. With each meal, have a different color with each meal. So that's a quick tip that I typically tell my patients. So have your greens, your yellows, your oranges, your reds, your blues, your purples. Try to get all of those beautiful colors in your diet.
And you mentioned certain wavelengths and their effect on eye health. Can you speak more to that?
Sure. So there's a lot that we, we have to think about when it comes to the light that our eyes are exposed to. So, there's a whole spectrum. There's UV light, which is short wavelength light. Much of that comes from the sun. And then there's visible light, which is through the rainbow that we can see. And then there's infrared light, which is longer wavelengths. So if you talk about UV light, the shorter the wavelength, the more potentially toxic it can be to our eyes. So UVC rays typically get filtered out by the atmosphere. So hopefully we don't have to worry about those very, very short wavelengths. But UVB and UVA rays, if they do get to our eyes, they can cause oxidative damage in the cornea and the surface of the eye and the lens. So it can lead to things like corneal degenerations, it can lead to cataracts, it can lead to ocular surface issues. So it's important to always have UV protection for that reason. But then also UVA rays can actually they don't completely get filtered out by the eye. Some of these rays do get filtered out by the eye, but some of those potentially damaging rays can reach the retina and cause retinal conditions. For example, macular degeneration is a very common condition that can actually lead to blindness in some people. So it's important to protect against UV rays. And what I typically recommend is you know, when it's very, very bright and sunny, to wear 100% UV blocking glasses. So that means blocking out wavelengths that are less than 400 nanometers in their wavelength. And so you can look for that sticker on your sunglasses. If you're shopping for sunglasses, look for the sticker that says UV 400 or UVA and UVB blocking. Then there's light in the visible spectrum, which I know is very popular in certain integrative spaces in terms of light therapy. So many of these rays can have beneficial health effects, and I'm just learning about this. But what I can tell you is that yes, you know, there are certain wavelengths which can be good for certain conditions. Even blue light can be good in certain conditions. It's used therapeutically for certain depressive issues or other health issues, for example, skin issues. But the shorter the blue wavelength of light, the more potentially damaging it can be. So you may have heard about, you know, all the controversies about blue light coming from our screens. You know, could that be damaging our eyes? Could it be leading to blindness? The short answer is no, it doesn't lead to blindness, but it can definitely cause visual problems, for example, digital eye strain. So blue wavelengths in the range of 400 to 450 nanometers can be potentially damaging, but most light that comes from our screens or our bulbs, for example, if we have CFL bulbs or LED bulbs, that's a slightly longer wavelength, so let's say 460 to 475, and it can definitely lead to digital eye strain. So for example, dry eyes, light sensitivity, headaches, blurred vision. So if you are, you know, exposed to a lot of blue light from your screen, it may be best to use a blue light filter that you can kind of download to your device or to your computer. There's a couple of filters that I like, but the one that I like the most is called iristech.co. It's a free download, but then there's a trial that's, I think it's like a 2-week free trial, and then you can purchase it. It's not very expensive. The other thing people can do is they can use blue blocking glasses to protect against blue light, you know, digital eye strain. There's another side to blue light, which is it can affect your circadian rhythms and it can cause difficulty falling asleep. So most ophthalmologists and people similar to me who are more integrative do recommend, if you're on your devices late into the night before bed, try to use something to block out that blue light 2 hours before bedtime. Or just the simplest thing to do would be just to stay away from devices 2 hours before bedtime, though I know that's very difficult for most of us, including myself. So those are some tips about light and how to protect your eyes from different wavelengths.
When you're talking about the blue light blocking glasses, are all blue light blocking glasses the same, or are there certain qualities you're looking for there? Like if you just jump on Amazon and put in blue blocking glasses, are any of them fine? Or
yeah, it's the hot new thing. You know, there's so many manufacturers out there, and you know, some of them, there are various tints out there, so you can see there's probably yellow and amber, and some are even clear. So you know, what you're purchasing on Amazon, is it really giving you the benefit that you're looking for, you know, which is to protect your eyes? So there was a really interesting study that was done by Consumer Reports, and it was published in 2016. What they did was they took the top three blue blocking glasses on the market on Amazon, and they tested them to see whether they were actually blocking the blue light that they said that they were, promoting. And only one of the glasses actually blocked out over 90% of the blue light. The other two brands only blocked out about 30 or at the most 40% of the blue light. So that was kind of shocking, you know, to know that there are all these brands out there on the market, but they may not really be doing what they claim to do. So what I would suggest is, depending on the level of blue light that you want to block, you know, let's say you're just, you know, just, you know, you want to just prevent, you know, if you're on the computer, let's say some people are on the computer 6 hours a day or 8 hours a day or 10 or even more hours a day. You know, if you just want to prevent digital eye strain during the day, you can probably get a lighter tinted pair. But if you really want to block out a lot of the blue light, right, especially right before bedtime, get a very kind of a more amber or even reddish hued tint. There's actually a brand that I really like called True Dark, and they have different levels of blue light blocking glasses, but they actually have one that's really meant for nighttime, which is a complete red tint. It even has side panels on it, so it really blocks out all the blue light. It's great for if you're working late into the night, or if you're, let's say, if you're flying, if you're on an airplane and it's late at night, you're taking a red eye and you're not, you know, getting good sleep and you want to just block out all that light stimulation that's on a flight, that's a good thing you can try as well. So they're called True Dark blocking glasses, blue blocking glasses.
Oh, awesome. That is such a good tip. So when we're looking at like blue blocking, the other thing that comes to mind is I know people discuss like, should you be blue blocking all day long or does that mess up your circadian rhythm? Because when you're outside, like during the day and when it's sunny, should you be getting that blue spectrum of light?
You absolutely
versus wearing blue blockers all day.
Yeah, you know, that's a great, you know, it's really a balance. So, you know, our brains do, and our eyes do need some level of blue light because that's giving input to our pineal gland, which moderates our circadian rhythm. So it's basically, you know, setting our internal clock, letting us know when we should be awake, when we should be going to sleep. So yes, absolutely. It's important to get blue light. And one thing that many people don't actually realize is the biggest emitter of blue light is actually the sun. So the sun emits more blue light than any of these other sources combined. For example, our screens, our devices, our TVs, our CFL lights, our LED lights. So that blue light is beneficial light to set our own circadian rhythm. So absolutely get some blue light. It's best to get it early morning to really set your clock. And then perhaps as the day goes on, especially in the winter months when you know, we have very short days, it may be best to kind of start to block out some of that blue light that's coming from screens later in the day. So it's all about balance, really.
As far as vitamins and supplements to benefit eye health, what do you recommend there? And I know it's probably very specific to the condition, but are there general recommendations you have around kind of general support of eye health?
First and foremost, and I think I mentioned this before, nutrition is key. So hopefully you're getting all your nutrients through nutrition. But in case you're not, or in case you're looking for certain foods that give you the best you know, protection for your eyes, there's a couple of vitamins that I'll mention that are really, really important. So first of all, vitamin A, which comes in, you know, it's highly found in carrots, which is probably, you know, what your parents told you is eat your carrots and you'll have good eyesight. So that is absolutely true. So, but vitamin A comes from other vegetables and fruits as well. So anything kind of that's yellowish or orange in color is likely rich in vitamin A. So squash, pumpkin, these are also great sources. And it's interesting. So it's not just orange and yellow fruits and vegetables, but greens actually are also very rich in vitamin A. So for example, any of the leafy greens like spinach or kale or collard greens, Swiss chard, these are all wonderful sources of vitamin A and it helps protect against night blindness and also dry eye. But there are many other important vitamins. And so there's this class of, they're called carotenoids, which are basically pigmented molecules that are found in our eyes, which act as natural filters of blue light and other kinds of oxidative stress. So these carotenoids are called lutein and zeaxanthin and mesozeaxanthin. So most people have probably not even heard of them, but these are really, really important to get from foods. And the most common sources of these are, again, your leafy greens and also yellow fruits and vegetables. So, for example, yellow peppers are great sources, orange peppers. And even though this is not a plant-based food, egg yolk is also a great source of lutein. So, so if you can incorporate, you know, some of those foods into your diet, that will provide you with the antioxidant protection that you need. Vitamin C is also very important because it's a building block of collagen, and many of the structures of our eye are built out of collagen. So it's important to get enough vitamin C. Also, vitamin E is also a potent antioxidant. So it's been shown in some studies to help protect against cataracts as well. So vitamins A, C, E, and then those other carotenoids I mentioned, lutein and zeaxanthin and mesozeaxanthin. Now, in terms of other great nutrients for your eyes, it's interesting. In terms of the omega-3 fatty acids, the eye or the retina in our eyes actually the highest concentration of omega-3 fatty acids in the body. So so the brain has a lot of omega-3s. I think the brain is made up of about 30% omega-3 fatty acids, but the retina in our eyes is actually made up of more. So it's important to get healthy fats in your diet, and that may come from sources like certain types of fish, for example, wild salmon, And then there are other types of fish as well. I think rainbow trout also is high in healthy omega-3s. And then there are other plant-based sources, for example, hemp or chia seeds. Those are great sources of omega-3s as well. Barrage oil, I don't know if any of your listeners have taken barrage oil either as a supplement or added it to their foods, but that's also a great source of omega-3s. And it's really about balance. So it's a balance between omega-3 and 6 and 9.
Now, when it comes to vitamin A, I know you're talking about really the beta carotene, like plant-based sources. What about, I know with the popularity of some of the organ meats now, mm-hmm. The animal sources of vitamin A or kind of retinol-based sources, what are your thoughts as far as eye health goes?
Mm-hmm. Those are absolutely great sources as well. For example, liver is a wonderful source of vitamin A, quite rich in vitamin A, and then many other vitamins as well. So I would say mix it up. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't have any meat or fish. But for those who do, absolutely, it's very important to get some dairy. Also, is also rich in vitamin A, but I know many people would like to stay away from dairy. So, you know, you could find what works best for you in terms of trying to support your eye health. I actually worked on with a good friend and colleague of mine an eye health kind of a questionnaire to see if you're getting all the foods which are beneficial for your eye health, and it's called the Better Nutrition Program for Eye Health. So if any of your listeners are interested, it's a downloadable kind of a questionnaire that you can kind of get an assessment of your eye health based on what your current intake is, and then get some suggestions on what, you know, if you do have gaps in your intake, what you could do to promote your intake. So it's a great resource for anyone interested in going further and learning about more about nutrition.
I can link that up in the show notes too.
That would be great. Yeah, I can create that link also.
When I think of the plant-based sources of vitamin A too, I do think of the importance of having some fat with them for absorption. Mm-hmm. As far as like absorption and digestion, I know sometimes people have problems digesting fat and may then have problems absorbing vitamin A. Can we speak a little bit about what vitamin A deficiency may show up as? And is that something you see often at all?
So vitamin A deficiency is common in many parts of the world, not as common in the US. So there's actually a certain condition where there's severe vitamin A deficiency in certain countries in Africa, and it leads to night blindness. So actually most severe side effects of vitamin A deficiency is night blindness and also dry eyes. So those are some eye issues that can arise from vitamin A deficiency, but dry skin, our skin also needs vitamin A and beta carotene. So dryness of the skin can also be a sign of vitamin A deficiency. There is also, you know, if anyone has had genetic testing done, there are also some SNPs of vitamin A metabolism, which can also, kind of impair absorption. So you may want to, you know, if you think that you may be vitamin A deficient or you're a little bit concerned, it may be worthwhile to check on whether you have the SNPs or not.
And I think genetic testing and looking at like the nutrigenomics can be mm-hmm. super interesting for a number of things, even like fatty acids and omega-3s. Your genetics can influence how you're processing essentially fatty acids in your body. So yeah, genetics is a really interesting area to get into.
Especially with eye health, I think we're just on, at the tip of the iceberg, understanding what all these various different genetic SNPs can mean for our eye health. For example, many people are, I mentioned macular degeneration before, there are many people who are concerned about it because either they have a family member who's been diagnosed with it and has lost vision, or they know someone, or they themselves have been diagnosed with an early form of macular degeneration. And there are over 50 genes that have been identified with macular degeneration. But what most of these genes do, we still don't 100% understand. So perhaps some of them have to do with lipid metabolism, perhaps some of them have to do with inflammation, or there's a certain part of our immune system that's called the complement system that's been implicated in macular degeneration. So I think we're just starting to learn about what all of these various SNPs mean for our eye health. So I would say probably in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll understand a lot more about eye health when it comes to genetics. And it's going to be really interesting to learn about, you know, what all of this really means.
And can you talk about the book you're writing too?
Oh, sure. I would love to. So I'll tell you a quick little story. So just for fun, I decided to get my genetics tested, and I did the simplest test out there. I think it was just, which is 23andMe. It's a swab. It's a buccal mucosa swab. So I did it just for fun to see, you know, what I may be at risk for. And the one gene that came up for me was the gene for macular degeneration. So you can imagine, you know, as an ophthalmologist, how I was a little bit concerned, and, you know, it was a little, you know, I thought about it. I don't have anyone in my family who has it. So, you know, I was thinking, how important is this to me for in terms of my risk? And what I started to look into it, and what I realized is that there were so many different epigenetic factors that can, perhaps put someone at risk for macular degeneration or increase their risk for macular degeneration. And so I was doing a lot of research on it, and I was talking to some colleagues and patients of mine. And what I realized is that there's really not much out there in terms of what can you do to prevent your risk or prevent vision loss from macular degeneration. So I decided to write a book. And so I began this book last year, and I'm getting very close to finishing. So I'm just kind of, I have one more chapter I'm working on, and then I'll do my final edits, and hopefully it'll be published in the next coming months. But what I do in this book is I'm sharing all of the information I've learned in my own research for myself, really, in terms of what I can do to prevent it. And what I'm going to be covering is the genetic risk factors, the foods that are really, really important for macular degeneration. How much of these nutrients do you need? For example, I mentioned lutein before and zeaxanthin, which are those kind of eye health nutrients. How much do you really need to include in your diet? So, and how do you get those, you know, those specific nutrients from your foods? Or perhaps if you're going to take a supplement, which supplement should you take? Because there are a million different eye health supplements out there, and they're not all the same. They're all so very different. So I try to provide, you know, information about food, nutrition, and lifestyle is so important. I talk about light, which we talked about before, you know, blue light and UV light. But I also talk about exercise. I talk about caffeine in the book, caffeine intake, alcohol intake, sleep. And so all of these other important lifestyle factors that can either increase or decrease our chances of vision loss from macular degeneration. And my book is very much evidence-based. So I try to, you know, take everything I say and have it supported by studies, so published studies. And so it's really an integrative approach to macular degeneration, which really has not been focused on in the ophthalmology world. You know, many of my colleagues are retina specialists, and they're excellent physicians, but even they themselves don't really know about all of these, these little details that are so important in terms of this blinding disease.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. I will definitely send you a copy.
That would be wonderful. It sounds like such a needed book, but so interesting as well. And something that I think, even if you don't have your genetics tested, it's so worth knowing and reading about, because prevention is really key, I think.
Yeah. In terms of eye health, prevention is so key. It's so important. You know, as I mentioned, our eye structures are so delicate, and once they're damaged, it's really hard to repair them. Some things can reverse, but in many cases, the tissues cannot be repaired, at least as far as we know. There is a lot of work being done with stem cells and eye health in terms of bringing back vision, but it's still not yet FDA approved for eye health. So until it is FDA approved, I've just caution people to be a little bit wary if they're considering getting stem cells for any vision related issue.
Oh, that's really interesting. I recently heard another podcast on stem cells and all the various uses, but I didn't realize they were using it for eye conditions.
There's a couple of clinics in the US, and there are actually many in other countries as well. For example, Germany and China, and even Australia, I think they have stem cell clinics. And there are different ways to give stem cells for eye health. For example, there are injections, either intravenous or even into the eye itself. So again, I would just caution people before you opt for that, just kind of do your research and learn a little bit more about it before you choose to do stem cells, because it's a little too early to know what the best route of administration is. But I think that is going to be the way in the future. That is probably going to be the way to restore vision in people who have lost significant vision from many different kinds of eye conditions.
When it comes to healthy aging and eyesight, do you have some general tips? I know we really talked about nutrition, which is likely key, but do you have some tips around really keeping your eyesight healthy as you age?
So there's a couple of things that are important. So first of all, you know, if you have certain other medical conditions, for example, high blood pressure or diabetes, diabetes is also a leading cause of vision loss and blindness in the US and in the world. So controlling blood sugar is so important. So glucose control and then blood pressure control, you know, blood pressure that's not well controlled, either too high or too low, neither extreme is good for vision health. If patients have high blood pressure, it can lead to things like bleeding in the back of the eye or even strokes. If people have too low blood pressure, it can lead to not enough oxygen getting to the back of the eye, and that can also cause strokes in some rare cases. So I don't want to scare anyone, but everything, you know, everything in moderation. So just, you know, try to get your blood pressure under control. Hydration is also so important to prevent eye diseases and that come with aging. So adequate hydration. What I typically recommend, and I know a lot of other integrative and functional doctors talk about hydration being so important as well for, you know, just to help our body process toxins and eliminate those toxins and provide the nutrients it needs. I typically recommend, just as a rule of thumb, taking your body weight in pounds, dividing that by half, and then that's how many fluid ounces you should be having every day. And it doesn't have to be only water. It could be other beverages. I typically recommend non-caffeinated beverages, or, you know, even having your getting your hydration through certain foods. So there are many fruits and vegetables that are very rich in water content. So that's another way you can get your hydration. Now, in terms of aging, another question a lot of patients like to ask me is, you know, as I'm getting older, I need to wear my glasses more. I'm more dependent on my glasses, especially for reading. You know, is that potentially going to hurt my eyes? Is it going to make things get worse? Is it going to be detrimental? And I think that's another eye myth that really needs to be dispelled. So a lot of people do have this belief that wearing glasses is because your eyes are weak and it's better not to wear them, but that's really not the case. What glasses do is they basically correct for the curvature of your eye, and it helps the image focus better onto the retina in the back of the eye. So it's really just a crutch. It's not necessarily going to make things worse. And then reading glasses, what reading glasses do is they basically magnify what you're reading. And again, it's a crutch. We do become more dependent as we age. So most people, by the time they're in their, let's say, mid to late 40s or even early 50s, most people will probably need reading glasses. There are some interesting new developments in terms of treatments for what's called presbyopia, which is the need for reading glasses. So there are a couple of eye drops that are being studied right now that may actually reverse this problem and prevent people from needing reading glasses. So I'm really looking forward to those studies coming out to see whether it's actually going to work or not, because I definitely wear reading glasses and I would love to not have to wear them. So I think there's some interesting treatments on the horizon for age-related eye changes. The other thing that happens as people get older, it happens to everyone. If they live long enough, they're going to get cataracts. And so it's not necessarily a sign that your eyes are weak or that it's, you know, a major problem. Cataracts, if they do develop, they can't be dissolved or reversed with drops, but they can be treated. So, if they affect vision enough, cataract surgery is a great option for improving vision, and restoring vision basically, as people get older. So there are some kind of integrative things that I recommend, but there are some traditional things I recommend as well for protecting eye health.
I really love your approach, and I think you brought up so many important points there. Also, one of the things I hear about a lot, which I'm not so sure on, is eye exercises.
Yeah. So if you Google, you know, eye exercises for vision, there'll be, you know, a whole bunch of different videos that come up about, you know, do these exercises and that will improve your eyesight. So, and then there was a book written by, there's a doctor, his name is William Bates, and he wrote this book, I think it was published almost 70 years ago, about how if you do eye exercises, you can eliminate the need for glasses. So the truth is that in terms of eye exercises, we're constantly exercising our eyes. So we have six muscles behind each eye, and they help move our eyes in different directions, so up, down, right, and left. And these muscles are probably the most metabolically active muscles in the body, because our eyes are constantly scanning our environment. They're constantly moving. So in terms of exercises, naturally, you get plenty of eye exercise by just looking around and reading, or you know, changing your focus from distance to up close to intermediate. So your eyes are constantly being exercised. There is no additional need to do exercises. Now, I'll say that with just with one exception, which is a particular eye condition where the eyes tend to drift and the eyes drift outwards, which it's a condition called convergence insufficiency. And that can sometimes cause difficulty reading or double vision. And in that situation, doing eye exercises is the only thing that's actually been proven to help improve convergence insufficiency. So for general, you know, kind of eye health, no need for extra exercises. But if you have convergence insufficiency, then absolutely yes. Do eye exercises. And these eye exercises are called pencil push-ups. It's a really cute little term that I like. So basically, you take a pen or pencil, you hold it at arm's length, you focus on the tip of that pen or pencil, and then you bring that pen or pencil up closer to your nose. And eventually that, you know, that image, that tip will get a little blurry or even double. When it gets double, really try to focus it back in, try to get it sharp and crisp, and then start over again. So these are simple exercises you can do to help strengthen your eyes' ability to stay straight and not drift out.
And one of the areas that got you into this or interested in integrative medicine, like you mentioned at the beginning, was migraines. What sort of integrative tips do you have for people with migraines?
Well, when I do an assessment for a new patient with migraine, there are some questions that I ask that are so important that I think most doctors and even many migraine doctors or headache doctors don't ask. And so I would first start with, what is your diet like? You know, what are you eating? What kinds of foods are you eating? Are you having foods that are causing, you know, large fluctuations in blood sugar? Are you having foods that are processed foods? Are you having foods that are high in nitrites or sulfites or histamines? And so I first do a dietary assessment to see whether there are specific food triggers that many people will have. And so, you know, it's important to figure out, which foods that you may be sensitive to. I'm not saying allergic, but sensitive to. And then the second thing I always ask is, how much caffeine do you have? And, you know, on a regular day. So people who have migraine, caffeine is a double-edged sword. So a little bit of caffeine can sometimes help with the migraine or improve it. But if you have too much caffeine in your day-to-day kind of diet, that can actually perpetuate migraine and make it almost like a snowball effect, where you actually end up needing more and more caffeine to have that sustained benefit. So typically what I tell patients who have migraine is try to reduce your caffeine down. You don't have to cut it out completely, but reduce it down to perhaps just one cup or one caffeinated beverage a day. The other thing which is so important with migraine, or, you know, kind of from an integrative approach, is nutritional deficiencies. And the one deficiency or couple of deficiencies I find very often is magnesium deficiency, as well as basically most of the B vitamins, specifically B2 deficiency. So in migraine patients, it's helpful to supplement. It's great to get it from food, but sometimes you have to supplement as well. And so I love using various formulations of magnesium for my migraine patients. There are many formulations out there on the market, but the ones that I found that have the best brain penetration are the chelated form, so either glycinate or threonate. And then in terms of B complex, B2, which is riboflavin. So, actually there are some studies that have shown that high dose riboflavin, even up to 400 milligrams a day, can be very, very helpful for chronic migraine. And then the last thing I'll just touch upon in terms of migraine, in terms of an integrative approach, is managing stress. So many doctors don't actually ask their patients about the different stressors in their lives, and stress is absolutely related to the frequency and severity of migraines. So I would say it's number one, two, and three when it comes to migraine triggers. But if there are ways that you can help to modulate the stress in your life, so we all have various sources of stress. You know, maybe it's coming from work or from home or from other responsibilities, or maybe even our health issues or finances, but it's a matter of modulating that stress. So finding ways to that you enjoy to help you mediate that stress. So for whether it be meditation or exercise or taking a walk or reading a book or listening to music or having, you know, spending time with your loved ones or friends, whatever way that works best for you, you really should try to incorporate some form of stress reduction into your daily life. I don't know, Dr. Zappola, whether you have any other strategies you found that work very well for stress reduction or specifically for migraine, but I'd love to hear your experiences as well.
Yeah. So I think I always say if I was stuck on a desert island, I'd probably bring like magnesium with me. I love magnesium. I agree with the magnesium glycinate for sure. I don't have as much experience with the 3 and 8, but I'm hearing a lot more about it. And then the B2 definitely. And I think the Canadian Headache Society guidelines include both of those with like pretty good recommendations. I think they're like
speed. Yeah, there's good amount of evidence. One thing I'll just say about the 3 and 8 and the glycinate is that many people, if they take magnesium salts, which are oxide or malate or sulfate, they can have GI, they can have an impact on your GI system. So many people take magnesium salts for constipation, for example, but the salts may not actually have great brain penetration. So that's why I like the chelated forms, because it has better brain penetration, but it doesn't also cause the GI side effects. It doesn't cause cramping or loose stools, diarrhea, things like that. So those are my go-to types of magnesium.
I completely agree. And I love that you look at food intolerances. I think that is so key and often overlooked. Do you, in your practice, tend to use like an elimination diet or journaling, or what sort of things do you use to help people identify what they may be sensitive to?
Yeah. So I love a headache diary, and there's a couple of ones you can download from the internet. I actually have one I use in my practice, and if anyone's interested, I can send you the link to it to put in the show notes. But basically, it tracks food intake, sleep, menstrual cycles, weather patterns, stress patterns. So, you know, it's kind of a concise way to track all your potential triggers in addition to food triggers. There's a great app also that can help you track your headache triggers. And the app is called Migraine Buddy. So it's a free app you can download, which is also, it helps you keep track and helps you identify what your triggers may be. Many patients who come to me for migraines have, you know, I'm not the first doctor that they've seen. They've seen like 2 or 3, or perhaps even 4 other doctors. So they're coming to me for an integrative approach. And, you know, after doing the initial assessment, I typically start off with a particular diet. I may start with an elimination diet if they're having very kind of severe refractory headaches that are just not getting better with traditional therapies. And then I usually graduate them to a mitochondrial diet. Now, this is a diet that has been kind of put together by IFM, or Institute for Functional Medicine. And I love this diet because it has 12 therapeutic foods, which are great for brain health, which really kind of promote metabolism in the brain and mitochondrial health in the brain, as well as in your eyes. So I love using that mitochondrial diet. So I'll typically do the elimination diet for about 3 weeks, and then I will transition people over to the mitochondrial diet for about 3 months. And the great thing about these diets is that it does kind of automatically preclude some of those foods that may be triggers for many people. So whether it's the processed foods, the histamine foods, or some of the other nitrites and sulfites. But slowly after they're kind of ready to get off the diet, I have them reintroduce foods only one at a time. And this is really, really important, because if you automatically go back to your previous diet, then you may not really be able to tell what are your triggers. So introduce only one food at a time. Perhaps, you know, start off with kind of having one serving of it, you know, the first day, and then increase your you know, kind of servings of it over the next couple of days. And after 5 days, if you're not really having a reaction to it, it's probably okay, and you can resume it in your diet. And then introduce the next food that you think may be potentially a trigger. And then just kind of, you know, try by trial and error and figure out which foods you may be most sensitive to. So that's my strategy typically.
Yes, I love that. I completely agree. I think that's such a good strategy. And the Mito Food Plan is really powerful when it comes to just reestablishing and kind of restoring the mitochondrial function. The other things I think about are like acupuncture and yoga. Do you recommend much of that when it comes to migraines or chronic headaches?
I do. So These are complementary therapies. Again, not traditional, but I think they are becoming more mainstream. So, for example, the International Headache Society, I think that they do put out recommendations periodically, and I think the use of some of these complementary therapies is becoming more accepted in the traditional medical world. So whether it's acupuncture or biofeedback therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, could be yoga, could be Tai Chi as well. I love yoga for many reasons, for general health as well. But I think it definitely has a significant role in migraine. But there are also different types of yoga. You know, there are many different kinds of yoga, so you also have to kind of figure out what works best for you. Personally, I love hot yoga, which used to be called Bikram yoga, and the reason I love hot yoga is because I sweat quite a bit, so it makes me perspire. It actually helps me kind of eliminate some of those toxins in my body. There are other ways to eliminate toxins through sweat as well. So infrared sauna therapy is wonderful. So I sometimes recommend that for my migraine patients as well as my my ophthalmology patients. You know, if they are concerned that they may have toxins, whether it's, you know, mercury or some other heavy metal toxin in their body, it's really important to sweat. So try to incorporate that a couple of times into your daily routine. I think is very, very helpful.
Yes. And I love the infrared sauna. We have one in our house and I use it quite a bit. But I have to tell you, the hot yoga, I feel like I'm going to pass out every time I do it, but I love regular yoga.
You know, there are times when I feel like I'm going to pass out too, but you know, it's important to stay super hydrated. So, my rule of thumb I gave you before, I usually, do 1.5 times that on my hot yoga days. Everyone just has to find what works best for them. So it's not a, one size fits all kind of approach to these kinds of conditions, especially migraine, because it's so individual. You know, what one person's trigger may not be someone else's.
As we approach the end of the episode, there's a couple of questions that I always like to ask every guest. And the first one is, what does the word nourish mean to you?
I think nourish is, it has so many different levels for me, particularly in my own health journey. So, it's nourishing every part of my being. So that means physically, it means mentally, spiritually, it's supporting myself in every way possible. So it's not just food. Yes, food is a major component to it, but it's exercise. It's having a support system, having social connections. It's having some spiritual mentorship as well. So I actually participate in two different kind of weekly spiritual group gatherings, and where I just feel that connection in a different way that I wouldn't get from anything else. So I think to answer your question, nourish is again it's every aspect of your life, not just health. It's everything.
What is one thing you do consistently for self-care?
So for self-care, one thing I love is the use of essential oils. We didn't get to talk much about this earlier, but I actually use a lot of essential oils in my practice for migraine, for eye health, but I love topical essential oils or in a diffuser. I like certain blends depending on the day, depending on how I'm feeling. So that's something I love to do for self-care.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay, since you brought it up, I have to ask, how are you using essential oils for eye health?
Okay, so dry eye is probably one of the most common issues people have, and it can affect anyone at any age. So I've seen dry eye in children and in older people, and as people get older. So it does become more common, or even after menopause, it becomes more common. So I love using an essential oil called tea tree oil or melaleuca for dry eye. And this is just one specific example, but what I like to do is I like to make a dilute blend. So you absolutely have to dilute it. You can't use it full strength. And I actually have a video, I think I've posted it in Instagram. I'm not sure if I posted it in YouTube yet, but I will post it on YouTube of how to make a dilute blend of melaleuca oil. And then what you can do is you can put it in a diffuser and then put your head over the diffuser under a towel. And that way it gets, and close your eyes, and that oil will get to your eyelids to help your oil glands and your eyelids, and help to improve the dryness. The other thing you can do is you can just take a little cotton ball and put a little bit of that tea tree oil, and then just clean your eyelashes at the end of the day with that tea tree oil in it. And what it does is it helps to restore the ocular surface microbiome. We didn't get to talk about microbiome much and how it relates to eye health, but it's definitely an emerging field in terms of how our gut microbiome affects eye health. And then also there's the ocular surface microbiome that's so important for eye health. So I think tea tree oil is a great way to support that.
Oh, I love it. That just opens up so many more questions for me. And I would love to talk to you all day about this. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with today?
I think my biggest kind of what I tell my patients is, eat well, be proactive about your vision in every way you can. So, nutrition, hydration, exercise, managing if you have other health issues, whether it be thyroid issues or gut issues, just try to manage all of that, and that will improve your eye health. So it's important to be proactive. Don't wait until something happens. And also, for people who are above the age of 40, it's really important to get an annual eye exam, because there are many eye conditions, like, for example, macular degeneration, cataracts, or glaucoma, that may not have symptoms early on. So these are conditions that can only be picked up by an eye exam. So if you want to protect your vision, go see your eye doctor at least once a year and get that annual checkup.
Oh, that is such good advice. And so I know our listeners are going to want to connect with you. Where can they find you online?
Great. Well, thank you. I would appreciate connecting with anyone. And I know a lot of people do reach out to me. They have specific questions about their own eye health or, something that they, their family member may have. So my website is a great way to connect with me. So it's www.rudranibanikmd.com. That's my full name. And I do offer what's called a discovery consultation. So it's a 10-minute long complimentary phone consult. So I can hear a little bit about what your concerns are, what your questions are, and I can maybe guide you in the right direction. So that's one way. The other way is I actually am pretty active on social media. So I have two Facebook groups. One is called Envision Health, and that's EN Vision Health. And so I talk about a lot of eye health topics on that. So ways you can protect and preserve your eye health. And then I have another Facebook group called Eye on Migraine, where I give a lot of tips on migraine, natural ways to help prevent and manage migraines. And then I'm also on Instagram. So I kind of combine it all into my Instagram page. So I give lots of eye health tips and nutrition tips and so forth. So please join me or follow me, connect with me, and be happy to talk to people.
Wonderful. I will link that all up in the show notes. And I have to say, I looked at your Instagram and it's just fabulous. And you have a lot of great tips on there. So I highly recommend everyone check it out.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Much. You're welcome.
And thank you so much for being a guest today. Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week.